people realizing sort of that maybe we've done a lot of damage in the past and beginning to understand. And all of the farmers I've spoken to have been so keen to try and sort of improve pollinator habitats and things within their farms. And I just think it's fantastic that people are so keen to help in any way, because they know that although farming is really important and obviously we really need it, it can be quite damaging to the ecosystems around us.
That was Lottie Apsey, a PhD student at Cambridge University, who's studying flower margins and pollination and the effect on the adjacent crops. She's joining us today to talk about the work that she's been doing over the past couple of years and also to outline what help she's looking for to continue her work into the future. I'm your host for today, Ben Pike, and you're listening to Inside the Pod from the Processors and Growers Research Organisation. Lottie is one of a number of PhD students who work in partnership with the PGRO, and that can range from sort of fully embedded within the organisation or just taking part in certain trials work which requires input and expertise on behalf of PGRO. So she's going to tell us a little bit about her work on that this morning. But before you perhaps get straight into that, Lottie, do you want to just start with a little bit of a background so that people know who you are? Tell us a little bit about where you studied and how you ended up studying what it is that you're looking into today.
So I am currently a third year PhD student at the University of Cambridge doing plant sciences, but I did my undergraduate degree at Durham University, and that was in straight biology, and then decided to skip out a master's and go straight for a PhD. But I've always been very fascinated with plants in particular, but also pollination and bees, having worked with insects and things in the past and a bit of my research during my undergraduate degree. That sort of brought me where I am today, working on this project. I saw it advertised as part of a collaborative training program with PGRO. And applied and managed to get in.
And here you are. Yes, excellent. Well, it's good that you've found an interest in this field and somewhere to work on it. You say that you have a sort of inherent interest in kind of plants. Where does that come from? Do you think, where does that stem from?
I think from like when I was probably about 11, I think I went to Annick Poison Garden. And that was where some of my first memories of loving plants came from. I just was absolutely fascinated with sort of how all these plants could produce all of these compounds, which could kill you so easily, but also heal you. And then from that, I've always just been fascinated with plants, and it's developed into plant interactions with the wider world and particularly pollinators. Such as bees.
Annick Poison Garden. I'm sorry to have a bit of a side. We need to sidetrack off to hear a bit more about that. What happens there?
I think it's possibly, don't quote me on this, but it's one of like the largest gardens of poisonous plants in the world or something. But okay. Someone was collecting poisonous plants up at Annick, and they just have this amazing place. I really recommend going, but yeah, getting slightly sidetracked. It's got these like massive gates with these plants kill or something written across the front. And then they take you in and discuss how all of these plants, if you touch them, they'll sting you. If you take one bite, it will kill you within 20 minutes and this sort of thing. And the exact compounds that do that. And I just thought how plants have evolved. Despite the fact they can't move, they've evolved to be able to protect themselves and interact with their environment in such a way. It's just absolutely fascinating.
Wow, yeah. Blimey, that's either going to grip you for life or it's going to put you off and make you run away, I suppose. So, good little sidetrack there. Thanks for that. Let's go back to what we're supposed to be talking about. You said your PhD. So what is it that you're looking at? What is it that your sort of theory that you're testing and what you hope to find from it?
So my PhD, the main title of it is Optimizing the Pollination of Vicia Faba, or broad beans, or field beans, depending what you call them. And it's split into two main halves. So I have the lab-based half of my PhD, where I do do sort of bee experiments and lots of behavioural stuff with bumblebees, where I'm testing different floral traits such as floral scent and the colour of the petals, and see what bees prefer. So do they prefer purple petals or white petals? Do they prefer this scent or this scent? And I'm comparing different Vitiafaba lines and varieties and see if they can even tell the difference or not. And then the other half of my PhD is based out in the field, where I do field trials looking at wildflower margins and how that actually affects the pollinator levels in the crop. Because farmers are being told that they should plant these wildflower margins. It's really great for pest control and pollinators. But there has been some research that maybe suggests that bees are being drawn out of crops into this much more lovely wildflower margin, basically going from something that's like repetitive to a whole buffet of flowers. So we're looking at, is that the case? Does it actually have an effect at all, and on the yield as well? So maybe there are less bees in the crop, but if it's having no effect on the yield, then it's great for the bees to have wildflowers.
Yeah. And are you specifically looking at yield, or are you looking at the other impacts as well across the field?
Mainly it's just pollinator visitation and then yield. So I spend my summers stood in a field of beans counting the bees visiting at different distances away from the wildflower margins, and then the type of bee and what they're doing. Then afterwards I look at the yield, and I am sort of considering some other factors as well, so brookid damage and that sort of thing, but it's mainly focusing on the yield.
I mean, that sounds like a lovely way to spend the summer, or this spring, summer, when the bees are most active in the crop. What have you, I know we're very early, you're in year three now, so it's probably too early to draw any conclusions, but just generally, what have you seen in your first couple of years of trials work that you've done so far?
So far, I've had a couple of rocky field trial sessions. My first year was definitely sort of me more working out what to do rather than getting great results, especially when it comes to yield data. We got the beans in quite late and then had a few issues with that. But in terms of pollinator visitation, it's been quite interesting that I've seen right next to the wildflower margins, there definitely seem to be more pollinators visiting there. And then there is a significant drop off as it goes away. So it does seem that wildflowers maybe do attract pollinators to the field, and then the further away it doesn't have an effect. So it's kind of what I expected to see, really. But rather than the other hypothesis was that there might be less pollinators closer to the wildflowers, as they're all heading to the wildflowers rather than staying in the beans.
Yeah. And are you looking at different wildflower mixes as well, or have you got the same wildflower mix sown by each field?
Unfortunately, just due to me only having 3 years to do field trials, I am just looking at whatever I can get.
Yeah.
The idea originally was to work with the same wildflower mix, but I've sort of expanded that to anything that's sort of commercially used in wildflower margins. So last year I did one of my trials at a host farm, and he already had an established wildflower margin there. And so I couldn't sort of decide, but instead I did some quad rats to sort of work out exactly what was in the wildflower mix. But if I had more years to do this, I'd probably look at different mixes and see if that had a difference as well. But maybe that's a project for a future PhD student.
Yes, a future PhD student, or someone with even more time than you've got to, as you say, sort of extrapolate those out. I can imagine that must be, any trials in farming are extremely complicated just because of the enormous amount of variables, aren't they? So, I can imagine that you have to sort of pick your battles and look for what you want. What's the feeling on the kind of amount of pollinators that are visiting? Are you getting the sort of about the number that you expected to see? Are you seeing more perhaps diversity? Have you, any kind of observations as to actually what pollinators are visiting the crop?
It's been quite varied. So two of my trials I have done up in Lincolnshire at a trial plot with PGRO, and one I have done it at a farm in Hertfordshire. And between the two different sort of Lincolnshire and Hertfordshire, there is quite a lot of variation. There were far more honeybees down in Hertfordshire, I think maybe because it was near a residential area, and far more white-tailed bumblebees. I'm sort of doing them based on, we're not looking at species level because it's quite difficult in the field, especially I'm working with a lot of volunteers to try and get them to sort of work out what species the bees are. But we do sort of look at white-tailed bumblebees, red-tailed bumblebees, carder bees, which is a type of bumblebee, and then honeybees and other pollinators. So it's been quite interesting. It's been also interesting looking at the behaviours of the bees. So again, down in Hertfordshire, we saw a lot of robbing, which is where they go around the back of the flower and they chew a hole and take the nectar that way. So they're actually less sort of directly pollinating the flower, and there's less cross-pollinating between different plants because the bee isn't actually entering the flower itself. There was a lot more of that in Hertfordshire, and I've seen barely any of that in Lincolnshire. So it's interesting to sort of think, maybe is that because there were more honeybees, or is that just because it's like a learnt behaviour? So when one bee starts doing it, they all start doing it. But I haven't really managed to look too much into sort of that kind of thing yet.
Yeah. Well, just out of interest, I mean, you obviously have, I think you called it before we started recording, an obsession with bees, or a mild obsession with bees. So why is it that, why would a bee do that? Why would it go in through the back of a flower rather than how you would traditionally expect a bee to access the pollen?
We don't really know. I suspect, especially with honeybees, that the way Vicia fava flowers are, the bee has to sort of open up the flower to get inside. And smaller bees tend to struggle to get sort of the flower open. Whereas bumblebees, the main pollinator of Vicia fava is bumblebees because they're quite heavy. So they land on this sort of wing petal and then open up the flower, getting quite easily. Whereas when there are honeybees there, because they struggle, actually for them it's almost easier just to go around the back and chew a hole. And then once one bee starts doing it, and other bees learn that behavior from them, so they all start doing it. And then what, I don't know if this is correct, but I also think bumblebees sometimes, from working with them, they can be quite lazy. So they go around, when I was in the field, you could almost see them go around the back of the flower, check if there was a hole. And if there was already a hole chewed by another bee, they just use that rather than open the
Wow,
flower
no way.
themselves. So, but we don't really know sort of why some bees do it and some bees don't. Because then other bees, we had a student in our lab who was from Kenya, and he told me that they don't have bumblebees in Kenya, but they still manage to grow Vicia fava there. And the primary pollinator is actually honeybees, but they don't have a problem with honeybees robbing their flowers too much. So
Yeah,
I don't know,
so
maybe some bees are just lazy.
just lazy, and yeah, varies from field to field, country to country, or county to county, as you're seeing so far. So you talked a bit about working with a team of volunteers there. Just paint a picture for how many people are in that team, and how do you actually set up in the field to carry out this work?
So again, it sort of varies between my trials. So my trials up in Lincolnshire, I was driving up from Cambridge every day with some sort of PhD students in the back of my car. We'd spend the day there in a field with a little portaloo, and then I marked out plots at varying distances from the wildflowers. We do like 15 minutes of counting. Everyone has a clipboard and little tally chart. 15 minutes on, like blow a whistle, everyone move, next 15 minutes, then have a bit of a break. We're there usually from like 9 till 4 and then come back to
Wow.
Cambridge. In Hertfordshire, it worked quite well because I was working on a much larger scale. So because I had a full field, we had a lot more plots, and it's also happened to be very close to my parents. So I had a proper dad out with all of his retired friends, and sort of about five of us, I think, each day. So on days where it was sunny and above 15 degrees, I'd sort of get volunteers out, and again, we'd do like 15 minutes of counting bees, and then whistle blows, everyone moves, and this time in the host farm we had a lot more replicates, which was, so we got huge amounts of data. It was fantastic because it's a lot of work to do by myself.
I can imagine, yeah. So you're just observing the numbers. You're not having to trap or anything like that.
So for my volunteers, we just observe. It's just, as I say, clipboard, tally chart. We look at bee type. So, as I say, not to species level, because it's really hard for volunteers. You don't know much about bees, and some UK bumblebee species are so hard to tell the difference unless you get them under a microscope. And then what they're doing. So are they robbing the flowers? Are they doing legitimate visits? Are they just searching, so come into the plot, fly around for a bit and then leave? Or are they looking at are they using extra floral nectaries, which are these little, we don't really know why they exist, but these little sort of leafy parts on the stem of Fichia faba that actually have nectar in them. So some bees will visit those rather than the flower. And so they're not actually pollinating the flowers.
Right.
And so that's what we look at. I'm also doing a little side project at the moment with my field trials where I did end up catching some bees. So I can do DNA extractions and look at exactly what pollen they had on them, so I can see, were they visiting wildflowers and the beans, or do they only have bean pollen on them? Do they only have wildflower pollen on them?
Okay,
I don't make my volunteers catch bees.
No, I can imagine there's only so much you can ask them to do, and you leave the expert work to you. But that's really, really interesting. And I know that the whole reason that this interview came about was because you were hoping to get some support from host farmers for next year's work. Sounds like a good opportunity to perhaps just to put your plea out now. What is it that you're looking for, and what does a kind of host farmer look like, and what do you need from them, I suppose?
As I mentioned, I've done my field trials at two different sites so far. The PGRO trial site, which is where I've grown sort of purpose-grown beans and a wildflower strip right next to them. But because of how sort of many other trials are going on up there, it's hard to get a sort of very big field-scale size experiment going. So it's not sort of truly representative of what is actually going on in a field of beans. So last year I managed to find a host farm quite last minute who happened to have a field of Fichia faba growing right next to an established wildflower strip, and he let us come and let me set up these plots. So I think we had three replicates of five plots, and he also happened to have a field next door which didn't have a wildflower margin, but with identically treated Fichia faba. So I could use that as a control for no wildflowers. So unfortunately, he can't host us again this year, just because of his field he's growing Fichia faba in this year. It doesn't happen to have a wildflower margin next to it. But I'm looking for preferably somewhere vaguely local to Cambridge or Hertfordshire that has something similar going on. So a field of Fichia faba with an established wildflower margin, or somewhere where I could help add a wildflower margin and we could potentially provide the seed for that. And then also if they happen to have another field without a wildflower margin that I could use as a control, that would be fantastic. The main thing is I need to have at least sort of 200 meters worth of beans stretching out from the wildflowers. So if it's I think I visited one farm last year and they had so many wildflower margins. It was fantastic, but they were too close together.
Too close, yeah.
So that's the main thing. And then for sort of 3 weeks in the when the beans are flowering, I'd need access to the field with a group of volunteers so we could go in and count beans. We try and cause as little disruption as possible, but there will be sort of some foot traffic. And then even better if I can get yield data, and especially if they let me take sort of a meter squared from various bits of the field of beans, so I could look at that for broken damage and all those extra things as well. So yeah, that's what I'm looking for. But if anyone happens to sort of know of anyone who might be able to help or can sort of meet some of those requirements, then I'd be really interested in hearing from them.
Well, we'll see what we can do. I know that this podcast is listened to by a lot of bean growers, but also agronomists who might know of you know, a bit more about the sort of wider geography of the farms around the area and be able to advise on where some suitable sites might be. So if anyone listening thinks that what you've just described could sort of be could fit their field rotation for this year, Lottie, what's the best way of getting in touch with you?
Probably emailing me directly, so we can start a conversation. That would be
okay.
Fantastic.
But rather than having to read out your email address on audio while people are driving along, if we put that, we'll put Lottie's email address in the show notes of this episode, so you'll be able to find it that way.
But also, if you get in touch with PGRO, people there know me. So I'm sure they'll be able to direct you to be able to contact you anyway.
They know how to track you down. Well, that's been really interesting, Lottie. Thank you for explaining the work that you're doing. I can't miss the opportunity while I've got you here and we've got a sort of bee expert on the call to just ask you a little bit about your kind of perspective, because we hear so much about bee populations. I think everybody recognises their importance, but depending on the agendas of certain organisations, you do hear conflicting reports about the state of bee populations and whether we're in a good place or a bad place, and whether what farmers are doing and environmental schemes are helping or hindering progress. Not to be too political about it, but what's your sort of take on things?
I mean, the research does suggest that there is generally a global decline in pollinator populations and insects generally, and I'm hoping my PhD will be sort of one step forwards in sort of sustainable agricultural techniques and looking at how we can improve yield and farming, but also in a way that doesn't negatively impact pollinators, because there are so many agricultural techniques that are sort of very detrimental to pollinator populations. But I think we're on a, personally, I think what's been done now is really positive. People are realizing sort of that maybe we've done a lot of damage in the past and beginning to understand. And all of the farmers I've spoken to have been so keen to try and sort of improve pollinator habitats and things within their farms. And I just think it's fantastic that people are so keen to sort of help in any way, because they know that although farming is really important and obviously we really need it, it can be quite damaging to the ecosystems around us.
So yeah,
I think we're on a positive sort of going forwards.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, it's good to hear that. That's sort of our general experience, speaking, you know, from myself, but also from sort of PGRO's perspective, is that farmers are willing to and want to know and learn and what the benefits of their crops that they're planting already to pollination, how they can improve that further, but also understanding what's gone wrong in the past and what approaches have sort of failed pollinators. So rather than having this sort of tremendously diverse argument about whether it's sort of good or bad, I think, you know, if we take a line in the sand now and look to move forward, then I think that can only improve the situation. So that's good to hear that that's your experience so far as well with your work. That's it for today, Lottie. Thank you very much for your time in joining us. I know you said this is the first time you've been recorded on a podcast, so hopefully it hasn't been too painful.
It's been great. I really enjoyed myself. Thank you.
Good. Well, thank you for your time. That's it for Inside the Pod today. That's also it for Inside the Pod for 2025. So if you've listened over the past 12 months, thank you very much. I hope you've enjoyed what you've heard. If you have, please leave us a 5-star review or a like on whatever platform you're listening to us on. We have made plans already for 2026, and so we'll be kicking off our podcast schedule in January. So make sure you hit the subscribe button and you will hear when we have released a new episode. But until then, wishing all of our listeners a very happy Christmas and New Year, and we will see you on the other side. Thanks very much for listening.